You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good morning and welcome to Finding Your Way Home. My name is Sherry Doherty and I'm your host, and this is week two of Real Talk on Real Estate. I wanted to start by saying how grateful I am to everyone for such incredibly positive feedback. Obviously, a lot of people want to talk about real estate and what home means to people. It can be very different for everyone. So I do thank everyone in the community for such incredible support. Today, we're going to continue our conversation about finding your way home and what that means to you and how you can figure out what that looks like. The first couple of things that I will mention is that before you are even ready to look at homes, there's a lot of things that have to happen. It takes a long time to save enough to have a down payment. And typically the down payment should be anywhere between 5 and 20% of the ultimate purchase price of the home. And I know straight up, it takes a lot of time and effort and years to save that kind of money. So if you're there, congratulations, you should be so incredibly proud of yourself. If you're not quite there yet, though, the number one thing that I would recommend is to visit with a financial planner. And a financial planner can give you all sorts of advice on how to save, even if it's $20 a week. That grows over time. Compounding interest is a beautiful thing. They can also tell you how close you are, and they can also give you access and point you to the best savings vehicles to maximize the money that you are saving and to tap into any of the incredible home ownership support programs that are provided not only by our city, but the region, our province, and Canada ultimately. So please make sure that you do that. It is one of the greatest things I ever did, just to set ourselves on the right path. Once you think you have enough money saved to have a down payment, the next thing you should do is get pre-approved for a mortgage. And by that, you need to go to your bank or go to an incredible local mortgage agent who can shop the banks and shop the rates for you. I typically always recommend that. However, visit with one of those people and they will give you really good, honest advice and feedback. They will tell you that, yes, you are ready for home ownership, or no, you're not quite ready for home ownership. The math just doesn't hang together yet. However, here's some things that you need to do for just a little bit longer, and whether or not that is saving some additional money or repairing a credit rating or paying off a debt that's going to make a difference, they can absolutely help you out with those sorts of things. They also have a lot of creative lending vehicles. And one of the things I'm going to talk about a little bit later is whether or not you would be willing to purchase what's called a fixer-upper. So a home, obviously, that needs some pretty significant repair and renovation. And they can get you a creative loan, which is called Purchase Plus Improvements. So you might need $350,000 to purchase the home, but you know before you can even move into it, you need to spend another $50,000 in renovations or repairs, and that gets funded kind of as part of the mortgage. They have all sorts of creative solutions like that. So I'll leave that to those experts that I am not one of, but I will be having both a financial planner and a mortgage agent on future episodes, and I will leave those experts to talk about their expert things. Now, assuming that your mortgage agent has told you and given you the green light that it is time to start looking at homes, then that's obviously when you call a local professional realtor, because they want to have a buyer's consultation with you where they're going to ask you a whole ton of questions, because it's really, really important that you know what you're looking for yourself, for your own sanity, for your realtor's sanity. But also, it's really important that you make sure that you have alignment with the person that you're purchasing the home with, and that you both have the same vision for where you're going to live and what you're going to purchase. And there's some really fundamental questions that you need to have good, healthy conversation around with the person you're going to be living with. So let's start at the top of the funnel and ask yourself, are you looking for city life or rural life? And by that, you often have to think about what's important to you and is there a location that's important to you? So do you need to be near a workplace, near a school, near a medical facility or a church or something like that? And that very well could determine whether or not you're going to be city or rural. When we moved to Kingston in 2010, I was working at a former workplace and I had been a big commuter. And I said to my husband, I want to put a pin in where I work and draw a 15-minute radius around that location, and I do not want to move more than 15 minutes outside of that radius. Fortunately, we found a lovely home that is actually rural, about 10 minutes away from that workplace, and that worked absolutely perfectly for us. We live on the west end of Kingston, and fortunately at the west end of Kingston, you can be on a couple of acres and kind of a rural property within 10 minutes of, you know, the local high school being Holy Cross, which just worked perfectly for us because we had other needs as well for needing the property. That's really important to people. And if there is something that is important to you, how far are you willing to commute to that location? So commuting across the top of Kingston can't possibly be more than 20 minutes. But that is a drive, it is a cost, and you have to think about the cost of parking where you get to where you're going. So it is important that you think about that as well. And then do you want neighbors? Do you want to be on a larger property outside the city a little bit on some land where you have some breathing room and some elbow room and, you know, fields behind you? We actually get wildlife that comes through our property, which is beautiful. Or are you okay more with subdivision life? And sometimes there's pros and cons to all of it, of course, and what you're looking for, but you need to decide with whoever you're going to be living with, which one of those things is for you. Is it city life or is it rural life? So let's assume that you've decided on city life. And one of the first questions that I would ask you is, would a condominium be something that you would entertain? So in the simplest terms, condominium essentially means you don't own the physical building that you're living in. You actually own the space within the building and the maintenance and the upkeep of the building, be it the roof or the windows or the foundation, that's actually on the responsibility of the condo corporation. So it is a nice lifestyle choice if you are looking for a low maintenance life. They upkeep the beautiful grounds and a common area, something like a pool or whatnot. However, you don't physically own the building. So again, comes with pros and cons. The good news about that is that you have like zero maintenance to take care of, but they do come at a cost. So condo fees can range anywhere from $400 a month to over $1,000 a month for some of the higher end buildings in downtown Kingston. And so that can become quite costly. And some people are just not interested in that. They want to own the entire building. And even though that means the responsibility of it, they're just going to say, no, condo life is not for me. I'm going to save an entire episode where I talk all about condos, pros and cons and the nuances and whatnot. So we'll assume for the purposes of the discussion today, you've decided to not look at condominiums. You want to look for a home that you own fully. So the next question would be, what kind of home would you consider? Would you consider a townhome, a semi-detached, a duplex, a multiplex, or are you only looking for a fully detached single family home? Now, townhomes and semi-detaches are great. They're often starter homes. They come, again, with pros and cons, smaller lot, less to maintain and whatnot. But some people will say, you know, no, we absolutely want to have a single family, fully detached home. The other interesting thing about duplexes is that means that there is actually living space for two families. So that could be side by side or it could be up or down. But a lot of people who are just starting out purchase those because they come with what they call, you know, an automatic mortgage supplement, which means that whomever you're renting the second space to, you're taking their rent to apply it towards your mortgage. So ultimately, it is helping you pay off your mortgage. And that's a great way to get a leg up and get started, particularly if it is your first time in home ownership. You are sharing your space and you are cutting your space in half that you have access to, but it's often a great way to consider getting into home ownership and creating a second space for someone in our city to live in. So it might be something that you want to consider. The next thing is home style. So do you have a preference about whether or not you want a bungalow or a two-story or a split level, or what kind of home are you interested in? We live in a population that We are top heavy on our aging demographic because of the silent generation and the baby boomers and the Gen X's. We're top heavy on those ends, and they often are interested in looking for bungalows. And bungalow, by definition, is a home that is pretty much just lived on one level. And so the bedrooms are on the same level as the common living space and the kitchen and everything like that. And they come with pros and cons. I happen to live in a bungalow. I don't love it. When I purchase my next home, I'll probably go back to a two-story. The only reason is I kind of feel a little bit weird about if I say to you, you know, go down the hall and turn left to use my washroom. If you happen to turn right by mistake, you're in my bedroom, which doesn't seem to provide a whole lot of privacy in my mind. It's not been an issue. It's probably just in my head. But it's not perfectly the design or layout that I would like, even though that I love my house. But people do love bungalows, and because we do have that aging demographic, they're very sought after. They are harder and harder to come by because obviously builders want to build as many as possible. So they can typically put two on a lot that might take a ranch bungalow. And obviously they would rather build and sell two than one large one because they make more profit on that. But it's interesting because they're rarer and rarer. So if you have one, they're very valuable. Hang on to it. Always a bonus if the laundry is also on the same floor. Some of them still have the laundry in the basement, but laundry on the same floor is spectacular. Or are you interested in a two-story or a multi-story? So in my vision, you know, you go upstairs to the bedrooms. Even bigger bonus if the laundry is up there, because that's spectacular. Our first house had the laundry in the basement, which was three stories down. And, you know, you had to step over toys and children carrying a laundry basket to get down to your laundry. So that's always a really nice perk if you have bedroom level laundry. So what type of home are you looking for, and making sure that there's alignment with you and whomever you're going to be purchasing the home with or who you're going to be living with? So the next question you want to ask yourselves is, what are your must-haves in the home? And a really big one in Canada in particular is a garage. So we've had a terrible winter with way too much snow, and people do not like to scrape ice or snow off of their houses at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning when they're going out to their workplace. So people really cherish having covered parking, and covered parking can also just mean a carport that's almost as good. Obviously, it's not as good for storage and keeping things safe and warm, but as long as you've got something covering the top of your car in Canada, you're pretty grateful. I've sold a couple of houses that don't have a garage on them, and the number one piece of feedback is there's no garage. The thing, though, I encourage people to look into, or I'll look into for you, is if that's the only thing preventing you from making this your next home, let's check the zoning, because in some cases the lot is big enough and the zoning permits you adding a garage or just a carport, and this could make this the home for you. So there's always a solution. That's pretty much my approach to everything. There's always a solution to everything. So let's at least explore it before you write that home off. Other things that are really important to people often are central air conditioning. So I have a funny personal story, but when we moved to Kingston for a number of different reasons, we purchased a home that my husband actually hadn't seen. So God love him for trusting me that much. We purchased it in about March, and we moved in July or August. And it was a very hot day, and it was moving day, so lots of work happening. And he walked directly to the thermostat to turn on the air conditioning, and he looked at me and said, "There's no air conditioning." And air conditioning is really important to my husband, even more than me, but it was completely overlooked and not mentioned to me when we purchased the home, which is unfortunate. But I am very careful when I am selling homes to people to point out when there is not air conditioning because of my personal experience. And we lived in that house for just less than a year. It was a fantastic house where we were very happy, but it was always a funny little point of contention that there was no air conditioning in our house. Other things people think often are important: they like to have no rear neighbors. So if you own a home that has no rear neighbors, that does make it more valuable. You want to think about whether or not you want an eat-in kitchen, whether you'd like a separate formal dining room, the number of bedrooms, the number of bathrooms. Do you want an ensuite in the main bedroom? Are walk-in closets important to you? Do you want a finished basement and a fully fenced yard? People often look for fully fenced yards because of either pets or children. So those are things that you would like to think about before you go out home shopping, so that we can start to narrow you down the funnel to options that are going to work for you. The next thing that we want to check on is things that you must not have. So these are no-go things, and those can sometimes be even neighborhood. Some people know there are certain neighborhoods or areas that they don't want to live in, and other people know that there are also their must-have neighborhoods. So those are important. And we're actually at a future episode going to talk about the various neighborhoods and the offerings of those neighborhoods around all of our local communities. So that'll be fun episodes. A big thing that I like to talk about that people will often say is their no-go is a pool. So people will spend a lot of money putting in beautiful pools and landscaping in their home, and they are incredibly valuable and they are incredibly expensive. However, they don't always give your direct return on your spend. And the reason is by putting in an in-ground pool, you're actually reducing the population of people who will look to purchase your home in the future by about half. You're either a yes pool person or a no pool person, and people will be looking at listings and falling in love with the house and then get to the backyard and go, ah, I don't want a pool. There are a lot of work and liability and upkeep and maintenance and just responsibility. And it's just some people are not interested. Whereas other people look at it and they say, oh my gosh, I've always dreamed of owning a pool. Can you just picture the kids playing in it? It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait to splash in there. That is the yes people. The issue is that by making the pool of people who would consider your home smaller, you're therefore softening your price, basic law of supply and demand. So people either love or hate a pool. If you're dreaming of a pool, or if you're thinking about putting a pool in, do it. Do it for your own personal enjoyment, because the value of your home is directly related to your personal enjoyment of the home. And you don't always have to be thinking about resale value, but just be mindful of the fact that that may make some people not consider your home. There are other things that people sometimes won't consider, and we're going to talk about heat sources a little bit more when we move into rural options, but some people will just say, oh, it's electric baseboard heating, I don't want that, or it's oil or wood source heating, I don't want that either. So those are things that you want to have had good conversations with whoever you're going to be living with about, and then right down into the funnel of, okay, so we've chosen Napanee, or we've chosen Kingston, or we've chosen Gananoque, or we've chosen South Frontenac, what neighborhood do we yes want to move into or would consider, or absolutely not, don't want to move into and would consider? So flipping the coin then, let's assume in those conversations you decided that you would like rural life and that you want to live a little bit outside of the country. So the first question that you should consider is, how large of a property would you like? So often people will say, I want nothing less than 5 acres. I want nothing larger than 50 acres. How big is this property that we're looking to purchase? And so that's an important thing, because we'll start right there by funneling down your options. Again, then, is there a preferred township that you're looking to live in? So do you want to live in South Frontenac or Greater Napanee or Lennox and Addington or Leeds and Grenville? You know, is there an east side, west side reason that you want to live close to one of those areas or in one of those specific townships? Another big thing is waterfront important to you? So most likely, I'm going to say, if this is a recreational property for you, most people want to be on water. That's why we all strive for recreational properties, is to be waterfront. However, if this is your permanent home, you might also want to live on water permanently. I'd love to. There are some spectacular homes on our many, many lakes and on the St. Lawrence around here that are permanent year-round homes. So is that important to you? And if so, is there a specific body of water? So do you want to be on Loughborough? Do you want to be on the St. Lawrence? Any of the lakes, do you want to be on them? Because then we just refine our search right down to those and cancel out any of the other options if that's where you've decided you want to be. If you are going to be living rurally, then of course you need to think about the fact that you're going to be managing a septic and a well. In 99% of cases, those things are not on city water and city sewer. And what does that mean? And what does managing and maintaining those look like? In future episodes, I am going to have those experts on with me as guests. So I wouldn't do justice to talk about it specifically, other than to say that when we originally moved to our rural property, I wasn't really that excited about being on a well and a septic. I'm more a city girl for sure. However, I you know, it hasn't been a problem. It's fine. We have a septic system. We get it pumped on a regular basis. We have a well. We get the water tested. We've had ample water supply, which we're very fortunate of, because there are areas and regions you need to be cautious of that have low water tables. And so those are things that you need to consider. The other thing is, if you're purchasing this property, what are you planning to do on the property? And does the zoning permit what you're planning to do? So maybe you're hoping to farm, and are you planning to farm crops or animals? There are absolutely zoning requirements for what you can put in particular types of soil, in particular regions, how many animals you can have on certain size of lots, and what kind of animals you can have on those lots. Were you hoping to sever the property and maybe put a secondary house on it? That all has to be done in due diligence before you firm up on a purchase to make sure that you can actually do what you're hoping to do on that property. Another thing that we talked about a little bit is heat source. So in rural properties, you often get into some of the other heat sources, such as wood or oil, and they all come with their pros and cons. There are still systems, though, where you actually have to go to the exterior of the house and add wood on a daily basis, and sometimes twice a day, probably right now in this kind of cold. I knew that that was a no-go for me, because I know myself well enough to know that I would not go outside in the winter to put wood in the furnace. I would leave that to my husband, and if he wasn't home, I'd be really grumpy. So that wouldn't be happening, and that was not something that I was going to want to be having to deal with. So we're on propane. And it's great and it's reliable. And we have a great company who comes and fills up our propane automatically every 6 weeks. It's expensive, though. That's the only thing that I'm going to say, is it definitely is expensive. The other thing that's really, really important to people and can be a deal breaker when it comes to purchasing a home is internet access. So I can be showing someone a lovely home that they're falling in love with, and they look at the phone and there's zero bars and they can't purchase the home. A lot of people work from home. They work remotely and rurally, and they absolutely have to have a stable, reliable internet signal to make sure that they can do their job that is ultimately going to pay for this house. So it's going to be a deal breaker if there is not a reliable, good signal. Now, I've personally had good experience with Starlink because we use it at our place on the lake, and it's been very reliable. I know that's not for everybody, but I do suggest people look into it if they're in love with the house and they just want to figure out how they can get reliable internet. But that literally is more important to people than air, it seems like, when they're purchasing a home, because you can't work, which means you couldn't therefore pay for the home. So that is really important to people as well. And other things you want to be cautious of, particularly when you are looking at rural properties, is there any environmentally protected land on the property? Are you in any sort of flood zone on the property, which means that the house is going to be susceptible? Sorry, not the house, but the land could be in an area that is susceptible to flooding, and that has to be disclosed. It will also impact what you can build on what portions of the property. And again, if you were thinking of severing, which means actually like parceling off or splitting the land, then you may not be able to do it, because it would be the piece that got severed. If that was in the flood zone, it would be devalued because people wouldn't be able to build on it. So that's really important. And then there's also going to be things like potentially environmentally protected land, which is super important, but you want to make sure that you're able to do what you want to do, not necessarily what the ministry says you can do on your property. Again, less in the country you're going to find pools. You may find them on some of the higher end homes, but definitely less in the country. You find more people who are more interested in being on waterfront than there are specifically people with pools. So all sorts of things, including plumbing and wiring and number of amps and all sorts of things that you need to consider that are going to be important to you. And like I mentioned, then you can also be right into saying, none of this is for me. This all sounds like it's a lot of work and a lot of time and energy. So I think that I'm going to consider a condominium because that seems like the lifestyle for me. So with that, obviously, there's a lot of things to consider. And I know there's a lot of terminology in that and a lot of lingo, but I hope I brought it to a place where it was understandable. And I'm always happy to, and welcome questions to help people on their journeys. One of the things that I thought would be interesting to do as a regular segment as part of the show is kind of go through and give you a good juxtaposition about what is currently available to purchase on the market. So for today's purposes, I picked the most expensive and the least expensive single family home in Kingston today that is available to purchase. So I picked a single family, fully detached home, three bedrooms, not on waterfront and not new, because waterfront and new homes are going to just skew things completely. So I just thought, okay, a resale single family, fully detached three bedroom home in Kingston. What's the least expensive one to purchase and what's the most expensive one to purchase? Because I thought that would be a fun thing to talk to people about. And then in the future, I'll do the other neighborhoods and communities and townships and things like that. But today, the least expensive single family home on the market that you could purchase that's available is on Trudell Road. It's currently listed for $350,000 and it's been on the market for 114 days. This one has disclosures all over it. So the realtor who has it for sale is doing a fantastic job. There was a fire in the house and it has not been completely remediated and it's not in move-in condition. It needs a ton of work and this will most likely be purchased either by a renovations restoration company or an investor or a flipper who has great access to professional trades, people like electricians and plumbers and everybody who can bring this home back to life. But at the end of the day, it is a four bedroom home. So there's three up and one down, two bathrooms. It's not a bad size. It's between 1,500 and 2,000 square feet. It's in a good area in the west end of Kingston. It's a bit of an older home, so it's not one of the newer ones. I don't see the exact year that it was built, but I know the neighborhood, so I can take a good guess at how old the house is, probably upwards of 50 years old. It just needs some love and it needs to be brought back to life. And they've done a really great job of, you know, again, there's disclosures all over it. There's smoke damage. It hasn't been repaired or remediated. So you wouldn't be able to purchase this for $350,000 and move in. And that's what I always caution people when they do start looking at things on Realtor. And they say, like, okay, what's the most reasonable or the lowest price house? Could I even afford that? And yes, you probably could, or maybe you could if you've been pre-approved and we've covered that part of it. But be careful because you want to make sure that you absolutely read the disclosures and what that property really is and what it's all about. And like I said, this realtor did a really fantastic job of disclosing that this house needs to basically be rebuilt and it's currently not safe or live-in condition. And so flipping the switch a little bit, I thought I would share with you the most expensive single family, fully detached home, not new, not waterfront in Kingston. And it is on Main Street up in Berryfield. And Berryfield is a spectacular, beautiful subdivision or neighborhood, I guess I would call it, on the top of the hill that overlooks Kingston and overlooks the river. Beautiful. I know someone who lives up there and her home is spectacular. It is currently listed for $1.85 million and it's been on the market for 27 days. It is going to be a very specific buyer, obviously, that can afford $1.8 million to purchase a home for themselves, but so worth it when you look through this one. It is done from top to bottom with the best of everything. It is also a three bedroom home. It is a 2.5 bath home. It's slightly bigger, so between 2,500 and 3,000 square feet. You are paying to live up there. It comes with a lot of prestige to be in this particular home, as well as perched above the Katakaraki River. It's a beautifully renovated home. When you flip through the pictures, it's drool worthy for sure. But, you know, it comes at a very hefty price tag because, you know, $1.8 million, you can actually also get waterfront on the St. Lawrence or whatnot. So you're, you know, paying about choice, because there also comes pros and cons with waterfront. It's not all glamorous and easy, and it is a lot of work. So this might be the best of both worlds, actually, because you can see the water, but you don't have to deal with the maintenance that comes with the water, and you don't have to pay actual waterfront property taxes, which can be very hefty. So I thought that was an interesting exercise to go through for people is the most expensive house on the market and the least expensive house on the market right now and what people's buying dollar could purchase them. In the future, like I said, we're going to start to bring on some guests next week. I am going to have my business partner, Rob Francis, on, and he is a military expert. He was in the military for 29 years, and he's managed personally all of his personal family military moves, and now he supports the military members in our community in his expert way in helping them manage their moves. And we are coming into military move season, particularly in our region. The members of the military are getting their posting notices so they know where they're moving to next, or the people who are coming into Kingston know that they're coming. So they're going to soon be on their house hunting trips. So there's going to be a lot of activity in our market. And so this is really a great time to get started if you are thinking about making a move. But he's going to provide some really fantastic information, particularly military expertise for our members. And to all of those members, thank you for your service. Again, it is such an incredible pleasure to have the opportunity to serve our community this way. I am very excited for you all, and I am honored to be part of you finding your way home. Have a great day.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
I'm Jen Dierenwater. I am a citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma.
I never felt welcome in the queer community. The biphobia and erasure I've experienced was so severe, I stopped going to queer spaces. As I've become more disabled, it is blatantly clear that I'm still not wanted in most spaces.
I'm not sure how to deliver a worthy keynote address in only 10 minutes while the world is on fire, but I will do my best.
To This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. European Rights Council urges conversion therapy ban, Russia declares ILGA undesirable, and Indigiqueer Creating Change keynoter calls for radical inclusion. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 31st, 2026. European Union member states are being urged to ban conversion therapy. 71 members of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe voted on January 28th in favor of the resolution. 26 voted against, and 2 members abstained. The Council of Europe is the EU's independent human rights body. The resolution to ban the discredited cure is non-binding. Sponsoring UK Labour MP Kate Osborne wrote, "Conversion practices have no scientific basis and have harmful consequences on the individuals to them. They induce or strengthen feelings of shame, guilt, self-disgust, and worthlessness, and lead to increased rates of depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, suicidal ideation, and suicide attempts." Osborne stands firmly with the scientific community, where the claim that sexual orientation or gender identity can be changed through a combination of prayer and counseling is widely condemned. Thousands of auto-generated emails opposed the inclusion of transgender people in the ban, and the gender-critical group Sex Matters lobbied heavily against it. They maintain they are trying to protect trans young people who may be confused about their sex. The Society for Research in Child Development refutes that assertion. In their studies, trans youth are as consistent in their identification as their cisgender counterparts. The queer advocacy group ILGA World says the conversion therapy ban establishes an international human rights standard and provides detailed guidance for national authorities. ILGA World's press statement issues the challenge. Responsibility now shifts to governments to translate the Assembly's recommendations into law and policy.
That could be one reason the Russian government finds ILGA World so undesirable. The federation of more than 2,000 affiliated groups revealed that it is now officially designated an undesirable foreign organization, as per a January 21st announcement on the Justice Ministry website. The announcement reportedly also calls eight other organizations in Europe and the United States undesirable, including the Dutch organization Before Ukraine and George Washington University. Russian citizens found guilty of working with undesirable groups face up to 6 years in prison. The undesirable law was first adopted in 2015 and was expanded in 2021 and 2024. It allows government authorities to target groups that are deemed a threat to the foundation of the constitutional order of the Russian Federation, the defense capability of the country, or the security of the state. The original law was blasted by the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights because it failed to provide a clear legal definition or criteria for how the determination of such a threat will be conducted. They warned that it may have serious implications for civil society, particularly human rights defenders. The new strike against ILGA is just the latest Russian effort to suppress queer advocacy. In 2023, the country's Supreme Court labeled what it called the international LGBT movement an extremist organization. ILGA World's membership covers more than 170 countries and territories, including groups in Russia. Executive Director Julia Ehrt was defiant in response to the designation. In her words, designating human rights groups undesirable is outlandish and cynical, but no matter how much governments will try to legislate LGBTI people out of existence, movements will stay strong and committed, and solidarity remains alive across borders. And together, we will continue building a more just world for everyone.
Budapest Mayor Gergely Kiricsonyi declares he's gone from being a proud suspect to a proud defendant. Despite the slipping popularity of Hungary's authoritarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, his government is following through on a December threat to criminally charge the mayor for defying its ban on pride celebrations. Kiricsonyi declared it to be a municipal event and therefore not impacted by a national ban. Up to 250,000 people participated last June in what turned out to be one of the largest LGBTQ pride marches in the country's history. Kiricsonyi is accused of organizing and leading a public gathering despite the police ban. He faces an undetermined fine. Prosecutors asked a court on January 28th for a summary judgment in lieu of trial. The 50-year-old Kiricsonyi was elected mayor of Budapest in 2019 and has been a progressive thorn in Orban's side ever since. A longtime champion of LGBTQ plus rights, he's defiantly flown both the rainbow pride flag and the Ukrainian flag at City Hall. Kiricsonyi did not mince words about the charges on social media, saying, "It seems that this is the price we pay in this country when we stand up for our own freedom and that of others."
Missouri's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care has been unanimously upheld by the state's Supreme Court. It also agreed that Medicaid should not pay for anyone's gender-affirming care. The measure was enacted by the legislature's Republican majority and signed into law in 2023 by Republican Governor Mike Parson. The ACLU of Missouri and the queer-defending Lambda Legal brought the challenge on behalf of three families of transgender young people, medical providers, and LGBTQ advocacy organizations. They argued that the law should be subject to heightened scrutiny, a more demanding legal standard applied to cases involving the classification of individuals by specific characteristics, such as gender. Both the lower court and the state high court rejected that argument, according to the Missouri Independent. The plaintiffs claimed that the law discriminates on the basis of sex and transgender status. However, Judge Kelly Broniak wrote for the court that it is only based on medical use and age. Broniak concluded, there is no fundamental right to seek care the legislature has prohibited. Because the law does not infringe on a fundamental right, rational basis review is appropriate. The Missouri High Court ruling echoes last year's U.S. Supreme Court decision that upheld Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming health care for transgender people under the age of 18. It ruled that the ban does not discriminate on the basis of sex or transgender status. Missouri's highest court also rejected arguments that the Medicaid ban violates the state constitution. Broniak wrote that it only affects government spending. She believes that adults in the state should just pay out of pocket for medically necessary transition treatment. The litigants are still deciding whether to appeal.
Finally, too many Americans are afraid of what the federal government will do to them instead of being confident in what it can do for them.
Bree Fram is running to represent a Northern Virginia district in the U.S. Congress. She was the highest-ranking transgender member of the U.S. Armed Forces before her forced retirement.
After 9/11, my country called. I served 23 years wearing the flag on my shoulder, reaching the rank of colonel. But then, Donald Trump fired me. Not for my performance, but because of who I am.
Fram was placed on administrative leave last June pending separation under the Defense Department's newly reinstated transgender ban. She served in the Air Force in Iraq and Qatar during George W. Bush's so-called Operation Iraqi Freedom. She came out as trans in 2016. Donald Trump instituted the ban on trans service members during his first presidential term, but the Biden administration overturned it. Fram subsequently joined the Space Force and was the first trans service member in the U.S. military to be promoted to colonel in 2024. The 46-year-old political newbie raised more than $100,000 from at least 400 donors across 46 states in less than 24 hours after announcing her candidacy, according to Metro Weekly.
I'm running for Congress to make opportunity affordable, to protect our basic rights, and ensure we have a government that works for you. I'm not going to run away from my oath to the Constitution.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending January 31st, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Was the music of Grammy-winning two-spirit interdisciplinary performance artist Ty Defoe, who was honored with the Indigenous Lozen and Detesti Warrior Award at the 2026 Creating Change Conference. An Indigiqueer welcome greeted about 2,000 activists, organizers, and advocates to Washington, D.C. for the annual Queer Political Strategizing event held by the National LGBTQ Task Force. The theme of the January 20 to 25th conference was Unstoppable, and it featured plenary sessions, day-long institutes on organizing for specific affinity and interest groups, a cruise, game room, and other special events, along with a wide array of resource spaces. For its opening general session, Creating Change turned to local Indigenous leadership and heard a keynote address by Jen Dierenwater.
Osio, hello. I'm Jen Dierenwater. I am a citizen of the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma and the founding executive director of Crushing Colonialism, an indigenous-operated 501c3 here in the so-called U.S. I'll begin with a brief visual description of myself as a disability access measure. I am a white-coated, femme-appearing indigenous two-spirit. I have chin-length brown hair with the right side of my head partially shaved and am wearing a black dress with very long native iridescent earrings that hang below my shoulders, black glasses, and a black and blue keffiyeh. I'm very honored to be here with you all today. However, I'm not sure how to deliver a worthy keynote address in only 10 minutes while the world is on fire, but I will do my best. It was in 2001 when I realized I was bisexual at 22 years old. I was in college in LA with no plans to ever return to my home of rural Oklahoma in Texas. I came flying out of the closet, draped in the bisexual pride flag as if I were Captain Bisexual here to fight all biphobia. Don't ask, don't tell was still military policy, but I don't believe that we as queer people should serve a fascist state, but that is a conversation for another time. Marriage equality didn't exist at the time. It still doesn't for disabled people, including us queer crips, as we can't marry without risking our life-saving disability and healthcare benefits. I personally don't believe in the institution of marriage as a state activity, but once again, that's a conversation for another time. When I entered the job market at only 16 years old, queer people could still legally be fired in the so-called U.S. When I entered the job market after college, only about half the states in the country offered any protections from anti-queer discrimination in 2003. But hey, we had Will and Grace, Queer as Folk, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, with more queer characters, mostly all white, able-bodied, gay cis men with the occasional white lesbian popping up across media. Things were bad, but there was a sense of hope that we could win. Maybe I was just young and naive, but as my family would say, I was full of piss and vinegar. However, I never felt welcome in the queer community. It has never felt like home. The biphobia and erasure, as well as femphobia, I've experienced was so severe, I stopped going to queer spaces. It was clear that I wasn't wanted. As I've become more disabled, it is blatantly clear that I'm still not wanted in most spaces. Then there's the anti-native racism that is so rife in queer community that still to this day, I rarely grace the doorstep of any queer establishment, organization, or event in so-called DC, a city I've resided in for the last 10 years. To say it's bad is a gross understatement. As I've aged, I've gained the wondrous act of not giving a f***. So I can no longer waste my highly finite time and energy to sit at tables where I'm not welcomed and embraced with all the love that I deserve. Frankly, I wouldn't be at this conference if it weren't for Dandelion and the incredible indigiqueer relatives and ancestors that are sharing the stage with me. Being both native and queer often feels impossible. Due to colonization, many of our hetero and cis native relatives have forsaken the traditional ways of numerous tribes that have expansive gender identities and completely different ways of viewing gender roles and sexuality within the nations. Over the years, though, I'm thankful to have built a wonderful, amazing community of two-spirit indigiqueer family. Please, again, clap for these folks. I've known almost everyone on this stage for years, and they are all incredible people doing amazing work for our communities. So over the years, I'm thankful to have built this community. In 2017, I returned to the circle as a two-spirit. Feel free to Google these words, two-spirit and indigiqueer, if you don't know them. You might even find some of my writing on the topic.
As a baby queer, I saw some progress in the fights for our rights, but as so often is the case for minoritized people, every step forward has meant a battering ram into our homes and communities. I want to talk a bit now about queer kin from communities outside of my own. In 2025, Crushing Colonialism, an Indigenous arts, media, and storytelling nonprofit that I founded, hosted our Decolonize Beats Indigenous World Pride series here in so-called DC during World Pride. We faced numerous obstacles, such as being dropped from our original venue, the Smithsonian National Museum of American History. We hustled and accepted a prestigious two-year residency at the Kennedy Center. Yeah. Our World Pride event was one of the very first dropped when the orange buffoon took over. As Indigenous people have been forced to do for hundreds of years, we hustled and made our events happen and even won an international award and were invited and were the first Indigenous people ever to speak at Euro Pride last year. However, the measures we had to take to ensure the safety and security of all were absurd. We had immigration attorneys on standby for all points of entry for our international speakers and performers. We had lawyers on standby in DC. We had numerous check-ins with our people while they were traveling. We had a trusted community internal security team in plain clothes throughout our events, watching for anything suspicious. We had numerous safety, security, and know your rights trainings and documents available in English, Spanish, and Brazilian Portuguese, even if that meant we had to spend the little money that we had on translations. We hired an outside security team, brought in medics and de-escalators, had escape routes planned if necessary, and so much more. All of this for an arts and performance series, but it was necessary. The so-called U.S. has always been a violent, fascist nation. It was born through genocide, enslavement, misogyny, xenophobia, and anti-queerness, and a lot more. It has maintained the status quo to this day through control, humiliation, and violence. Many like to say the U.S. is now like the Nazis, but the Nazis learned from us. The concentration camps were based on the reservation system. We find ourselves today in the belly of the beast, where horrific decisions are made daily, where war criminals reside freely, some of whom may even be queer. A drone is still a drone, even with a rainbow sticker. We must fight for all of our queer and Indigenous relatives globally, from religious and anti-queer oppression, environmental destruction, colonialism, imperialism, multinational corporations, and fascist nation states. This, of course, includes fighting for our siblings in Sudan, Congo, Palestine, Venezuela, Somalia, Greenland, and beyond. Every single member of the queer community matters, regardless of where they live, and the opinion of who's in the aptly named White House, a home built by stolen people on stolen land to house war criminals. We've all heard the enraging and heartbreaking story of Renee Good, but many Black, Brown, Asian, and Indigenous people came before her for centuries. Indigenous people are still kidnapped and removed by the federal government. On the homelands of the Dakota in Minneapolis, there has been a reign of terror impacting the Native community. It has reached a point where the American Indian movement are patrolling the Native American cultural corridor in the Little Earth neighborhood, which is the only urban Native housing complex in the so-called U.S. AIM was founded in Minneapolis in the 1970s as a result of the police brutality by the Minneapolis Police Department on Native people. Our Indigenous relatives from the Tohono O'odham tribal nation, who span across the border of the so-called U.S. and Mexico, have known the terror of Border Patrol for many, many years. There has also recently been a series of arrests and confessions of ICE agents for a sex trafficking ring. Indigenous women and children have some of the highest rates per capita of sexual violence and are often trafficked in this country across the borders of so-called Canada and Mexico. To say I'm terrified for our relatives doesn't do justice to the centuries of intergenerational and historical trauma that has forcefully taken up space in my body. Make no mistake, whether local cops, BIA, DHS, or ICE, this is a threat to all of us. The violence the trans, two-spirit, and non-binary community is facing has partially been a litmus test for what the government can get away with on all queer people. This could have been avoided altogether if white cis people, including white privileged queers, had simply listened to the rest of us. Of course, our lives would have to matter for you all to listen and for that to occur. However, if we do not, as an entire community, queer kin fighting side by side with justice for all at the core of our work, then I fear for us all. We cannot rely on the government or supposedly queer-friendly corporations or even nonprofits to save us, as these systems were not made by us or for us and have been designed to extract money and labor out of all of us until it kills us. And even then, they make money off of us when we're dead.
Yeah.
We've lost so many of our beloved since 2020. I've grieved over the loss of countless brilliant and dedicated down-ass people fighting for so many. COVID, a lack of health care, state violence, and oppression were heavily responsible for these losses. In a different world, Nex Benedict, Jonathan Joss, Koya White Hat Artichoker, Sarah Millery, Mushin Hendricks, Ali Jehon McElentil, and Patty Byrne, and many others whose names we will most likely never know, would still all be with us today. I sit on the shoulders of giants. Those giants were human and deserved all of the love and supports they needed for a rich, healthy, happy life. I challenge you all to become involved in movement organizing, which I know many of you are, but you know, if you can, do more. And I challenge you to also get involved in your local community's mutual aid groups that are truly rooted in intersectionality and community care. And if you see gaps in care, step up and fix them. And do not expect femmes and women and BIPOC folks to do all the labor, because we are tired. Do not forget all of the people, indigenous, disabled, rural, migrant, black, and beyond. When you think you've meaningfully included everyone, stop and look around, because I guarantee you have forgotten someone. We have years of institutional oppression to unlearn, but we must do it. I say this because we can and must do better, and we are out of time. There is no justice, no joy, no life for any queer person as long as one of us suffers. We must mourn and honor our dead, but we must fight like hell for the living and the seven generations to come. Wado, thank you.
Was Jen Dierenwater, Executive Director of Crushing Colonialism, speaking at the Unstoppable 2026 Creating Change Conference held by the National LGBTQ Task Force. For choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Michael LeBeau and Ava Davis and produced by Brian DeShazer. Greg Gordon produced this week's Jen Dierenwater feature, with thanks to Kathy Renna and the National LGBTQ Task Force. Paul Simon and Ty Defoe performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley celebrating their 50th year together, and all the listeners listener donors who made this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WJFF Jeffersonville, New York, 2SER Broadway, New South Wales, KGNU Boulder, Denver, Fort Collins Ward, Colorado, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.